Hi folks, thank you very much for joining us for this session. The reason we're a little bit late starting is we've just been trying to battle New Zealand internet. Pretty sure everybody knows how that feels right now. Just in order to be able to make sure that we can access things in the outside world. So hopefully we're getting there. We're still seeing things dropping in and out on us a little bit here, so we'll see if we can get through this kind of thing.
You're gonna have to trust us.
Yeah, we might have to just like explain some features through MIME, unfortunately. No, we should be okay. So my name is Simon May. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. And this is Andrew
Kosmoudakis. I'm a practice lead for Intergen based out of Wellington, also a Microsoft partner seller.
And we're going to talk about connecting up to Azure Active Directory to enable Windows 10 to be able to do Active Directory join and why you might want to actually do this. That probably is the million-dollar question, isn't it, really? Why would you want to do this? Well, it actually opens up a lot of cool new things inside of Windows. Being able to connect to the cloud, to be able to have your identity in the cloud, means that you don't necessarily have to do lots of on-premises infrastructure rollout in order to be able to support devices moving around and still being within your sphere of control wherever they happen to go. We've done a lot of work inside of Windows to make this a really useful thing to be able to do. And I'm going to just start off by just talking about some of the reasons why it's important and why we've had to think about the way that identity works inside of Windows. Identity really is key to the way that you manage devices and manage people inside of your IT organization. And it's one of those areas where, frankly, it's become a little bit too easy to steal identities, either corporate or personal identities. You don't go through a week where you don't really hear of some kind of information breach where passwords and usernames weren't leaked onto the internet, where companies weren't attacked because somebody had all of their passwords stored in an Excel file. These things happen on basically a weekly basis. So we've done quite a lot of work inside of Windows 10 to try and move away from having to know things like passwords. And you saw a really good demo of this inside of the keynote yesterday. We showed it inside of the Windows 10 session that we did this morning. Moving away from needing passwords. Moving towards being able to use enterprise-grade biometrics. Who was in the session this morning that Catherine and I did where we did the Windows 10 unlock? Okay, around about half the room. So a few things happened in that session. Firstly, it went wrong. There was the way that the camera works for the facial recognition is not like your average webcam. Your average webcam is just a camera. Your Windows Hello device is actually an infrared sensor. And what it's doing is it's actually throwing infrared at you. It's kind of like using your remote control and pointing at yourself. You can't see it, but there is infrared light coming towards you. And the sensor is then calibrated to the same wavelength to be able to look at what's happening. So it's using the infrared to look at your face and understand the contours, the heat, whether it's moving, whether it's not, all that kind of thing. So it's very different from a picture, which could have, in effect, a normal camera will just see any image, make up, all the colors will make up things inside of the image sensor in just the same way as it's made up inside of your brain. But it's very hard to fool infrared by showing it something. You could show it a phone with a picture of a person on it, and it'll just see nothing at all, actually. You could show a picture. Cos has a photograph of me. I'm not sure why Cos has a photograph of me. But he does. And you could just show that to a sensor, and it would just appear as if it was the other side of the piece of paper. It would appear blank. It wouldn't allow unlock. But there's some other things that we can do with that as well. There are a couple of ways that you could try and fool it. One way could be that you could try and create a Simon mask on a 3D printer. You could hold that up in front of the picture, in front of the screen. Again, it wouldn't work. It would actually not happen. Now, Cos doesn't have a 3D printer, so he couldn't do that.
I'm building one.
Oh, you're making one. Okay. But if he had, we could have shown you. It wouldn't work. You can even get twins in front of the same camera. And it'll unlock for the correct twin that's registered with the device, but not for the other one. It's pretty important, even if they're identical. It's a very, very secure level of biometrics. And we can make it slightly more secure as well in a really simple way. Your faces are 3D. They're three-dimensional. If you turn your head, you know what? Your face turns with it. That means that the infrared that's coming towards you will alter in the way that it's hitting your face. The camera knows to be looking for that. So we can use that as an extra way of securing the gesture. And that's an important piece of language that we've started using. Gesture. The unlock gesture. We're no longer talking about an unlock password or a PIN. In fact, PINs and passwords can be gestures. We also have other gestures that we can use within the biometric framework. We can use fingerprint, or we can use iris scans. Now, this is not your old kind of sci-fi iris scan where you have to go in front of the computer and go, like, try and wink specially at it. It's just a normal looking camera, and it will just be able to look at your face and just get your iris. Kind of cool. There's no kind of laser that goes off and scans your face either. The fingerprint sensors are really neat. And there's lots of stuff on the internet around how you can hack the fingerprint sensors and turn them into a button. So you just press a button and it unlocks the machine. That doesn't work with Windows Hello, because we don't support the kind of insecure sensors that some other manufacturers have used in those kind of biometrics. In fact, we have sensors which will, for fingerprint recognition, work underwater. That's kind of cool. You can now take your computer underwater and unlock it. I'm guessing that the holes for the fan are going to cause some problems there, but the fingerprint sensor is going to work. So we've been able to build those kind of new sensors into the biometric framework, and they can be taken advantage of by things like Microsoft Passport. And Microsoft Passport is a very secure way of being able to secure credentials that either come from Azure Active Directory or from an what we call an MSA, a Microsoft account, a Hotmail account, in essence. Either which is a way of setting up Microsoft Passport. If you go the consumer route, you use an MSA, then we take tokens from your Microsoft account, and those tokens are put into the TPM, and then they're secured with an unlock gesture, and they're encrypted, obviously. And then when you go to anything that uses a Microsoft account, it will unlock for you without you having to put your password in there. And you're still secure because you have your combination of your gesture, i.e. what you know, and your physical hardware, what you have. That gets you into a very secure position, much more secure, in fact, than passwords. You're all kind of used to that exact same thing, the idea of what you know and what you have from your bank cards that you use every day, chip and PIN, in order to pay for things. So what you know, what you have system. That's what we're trying to move Windows to be. In order to make this work from an enterprise point of view, we had to make it so that Azure Active Directory knew what to do in that set of circumstances. On-premises directories would have been really hard to make this work. You would have to go and do what we had to do in the past. Who's had to do, in order to be able to, I don't know, take on new features for Windows 7, who had to go and do a full domain level upgrade? Yeah, they were fun, weren't they? Extending the schema, all that kind of stuff goes away. We don't need to do that because we have Azure Active Directory in order to be able to leverage it, and we've already done all the work for you. We also made things extra hard inside of Windows. And if I say the phrase pass the hash, does everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay, this is a very, very common now, sadly, a way of attacking a network. And what you actually do here is you take a set of credentials, you take the hash of those credentials, and then you use them to access something on a machine. And you keep going until you can eventually find that there's a hash that allows you to access a hash store. Inside of that hash store, there's another hash, and it allows you to get somewhere else. And you slowly use it to traverse a network. It's we actually, only up until a few years ago, it was only theoretical, and then it was made very much less than theoretical very quickly. So we've built Windows to be different. And essentially what actually happens here is that there's another virtual machine running on your Windows instance. And that virtual machine is essentially like an out-only virtual machine. You can't talk to it. It's like talking to a brick wall. You won't get a response. What you have to do is put up a flag outside and say, I need some help, please, with credentials. And then it'll turn around and go, okay, you need some credentials. I'm just gonna check that you're secure enough for me to say, okay, I'm gonna do that for you, and then I will pass your credentials on. That makes it really hard in order to be able to access any of the other hashes that are stored inside of that. And that's the idea that we've built with Credential Guard. We can only do that by leveraging, again, Azure Active Directory or Microsoft accounts in order to put the credentials and the tokens into the same place. And then furthermore, we've built this technology called Enterprise Data Protection. You saw this inside of the keynote. This is the demo where we got the keys on top of certain files. It does a couple of things for us. It separates your documents into your two personas, moves them into your work persona and your personal persona. They're encrypted. Guess where the encryption keys come from? Azure Active Directory. Now, we actually, inside of Azure Active Directory, have made a massive investment in inside of Azure into the HSMs that we have in place. So inside of Azure, we actually have HSMs in all of our data centers, including the little bits of explosives that are inside all of those HSMs. They're in a separate room from all of your data. Don't worry. If somebody accidentally causes one of those to explode, it's not going to take down the rest of Azure. But we've made a massive investment there so that you can actually put keys into that and they can be secured with the same level of encryption that you have on-prem. They're actually Thales HSMs. We've also made Windows completely updatable. And Windows is managed in a pretty cool way to make it possible to be able to do things like dynamic provisioning.
So who's here who's used to deploying Windows from a deployment tool like MDT, Config Manager? Anybody using any other third-party products actively? There's still a few around, I guess.
Yep,
a few. So we're used to that clean install. We take the machine, we wipe it, we scrub it back to basics, and we apply an image, we apply our applications, we apply our user settings, and we move on again. 2-3 hours later, the user's got their PC, they're able to work. They start getting applications again because their user persona's signed in, so they're aware of the applications coming down to them. That approach of wipe and replace has sort of changed tack. It's consuming too much time. Administrators or consultants as ourselves running around and installing Windows and deploying Windows for customers are finding that it's just too much time, too much effort. So what they've started to look at with Windows 10, we start to have the ability to dynamically provision machines or even do in-place upgrades. What we end up with the in-place upgrades, we've had in-place upgrades in the past, but not to the extent where we do now. What we're actually doing is letting Windows do the full work on this upgrade. It's taking all the data, the applications, the settings for that user, picking them up and literally shifting them to the new version of Windows. We are layering down Windows 10. Windows 7 or Windows 8 or 8.1 may still be there, but the approach is to actually layer Windows over the top and give the user the same similar type of experience they had before the upgrade, the same settings, the same configuration, making it simpler for us as admins to deploy Windows and do the upgrades for these users with minimal impact. On top of that, drivers. The pain of any administrators, they're there, they're in place, they're working. Windows replaces what it needs to replace. It might grab some additional drivers if we provision them with it. We have the ability now as well to create a package to upgrade. So if we start looking at things like I've gone down to Dick Smith's or JB Hi-Fi, I've bought a Windows Pro machine. I rock up and I need to provision it. And it could be anybody in the organization. It could be an enterprise-owned machine. I'm not talking about necessarily BYO. Taking that machine from Pro to Enterprise. And it may just be a license key we apply. But what happens if we want to get rid of those built-in applications that we don't want? Maybe we don't want the users using the built-in mail. What about if we need to make changes and enable additional features out of Enterprise? Using the designer that comes with Windows 10, being able to configure a package that we apply to a Windows 10 machine and make the changes and the policies and configuration that we want as an administrator to apply. That gives us greater flexibility and granularity over what we can do with these machines. So it's not just a wipe, build, install, apply. We've actually got a lot more dynamic approach to how we manage these devices now going forward. I suppose everybody's seen that the consumer grade environment has everybody downloaded Windows 10 in the background. It was sitting there waiting, and then once it was ready, the machine did the upgrade. That is actually the recommended approach for Windows 10 upgrades. So if you think about your environment, how many people are running Windows 7 still? I should start further back. Who's running Windows XP? Is anybody running it? Oh, yeah, cool.
There's no local government in the room at all.
Actually, they've been pretty good here. Windows 7? 8, 8.1, 10. All right, so we've got some people on the journey already. So you look at that, the environment there, and you go, okay, I want to be able to do a simple upgrade. I don't want to impact my users. I've got a small window of opportunity. Who's seeing more and more uptake of laptops in their environment? Desktops are there. There's task workers that use desktops, but a lot of people are moving to a laptop or a tablet type approach within their organization. They're becoming quite cheap. So being able to actually get an upgrade working on these devices in a quick and efficient manner means you've got minimal impact to the users. They can still take their devices home at the end of the day and still work on them like they were the previous day. So, I'll build it out, sorry. Along with Windows 10, we're looking at simplified management. A lot of the tools and services we've traditionally used to manage our environment are the same. Config Manager is Config Manager. We upgrade it, we apply the latest service pack, we get the latest bells and whistles and support for features inside the application, the Windows platform, sorry. Device management. Windows 8, Windows 8.1, now Windows 10, all supporting the device and managing the device like a mobile device. So think of taking an iOS device and enrolling it into an enrollment system and into an MDM system. You can do the same thing with Windows 8 and above. So Windows 10 has taken the same approach. We've got this Windows Intune being the product of choice, but you can use other third-party tools and software. But with Windows 10, we've still got that unified approach. There's no new tools to manage Windows. They're the same tools you have deployed today. You may just have to do a few patches and a few updates. That spot's really bad, isn't it? So if you think about it that way, your investment in your current infrastructure is there. But if we look at your cloud services, Windows 10, through an MDM solution like Microsoft Intune, gives you the ability to further stretch that management. If you think about Windows and everything we saw in the keynote yesterday, one OS across multiple platforms. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to manage it and roll an Xbox, but you know the endless possibilities are there. But if you think about a Windows phone and a Windows 10 client, being able to apply one policy to both platforms to give you a similar experience across the two. We saw how Continuum can switch the device and give us the ability to have a Windows 10 phone acting as a desktop. We still need to manage that, don't we? So having that ability to apply policy across that as a consistent manner using the same tools we're used to today really enables us as administrators, empowers us to have that control and that manageability over things. I guess one part I have to cover off around the MDM component as well is when we talk about Microsoft's management platform, whether it be Config Manager or Intune, it's not just about Windows. Linux, iOS, Mac, Android, they're all supported. And in some cases in the past, Microsoft has provided better depth and support for its third-party products, third-party competitors, than it has for its own products. Windows 10 now extends that. We're actually seeing Microsoft providing greater feature richness and manageability into the client. If I look at Windows 10 and I go, okay, I've jumped into a console, I can't see everything that I want to configure in that console, well, I need to look up the configuration service providers. Think that just because it's not there in the console doesn't mean you can't provide a management policy around it. Now, of course, you saw yesterday we talked about universal applications in the keynote. I know it sounds pretty boring to some of us who are infrastructure people. We go, oh, yeah, it's an app. Right? I push out an app, it's an app. Developers will be excited about it. Their applications across more platforms. But if I return it back to the infrastructure people, there is some stuff for us to get somewhat excited about. Being able to manage those apps. If I think about the Windows Store, who had fun managing Windows Store applications under 8.0 and 8.1 in the enterprise? It was awesome, wasn't it? Everybody had to have an account. If you provided an account, it got locked out because it signed in too many times. You had up to 82 times you could use that account. Well, who were the 82 users that used that account? How do I move on to the next 82 users to give them the next account? It was a management nightmare. But with Windows 10, although it's a client-based operating system, when we think about it from a client perspective, we go, it's an OS. I can look and feel and touch it. In the background, it also enables a number of other things for us. So universal applications being one. But with universal applications, we also get enterprise-grade management over those apps. I can deploy those applications via Config Manager, Intune. Yep, we're used to modern applications, Windows 8 and above apps going out via those tools. But what about store apps? So the Windows Store for Business allows me as an administrator to manage Windows 10 devices like I would any other applications in my environment. So I turn around, I can say, all right, we for some reason want to deploy Angry Birds. The CEO has made a decision that Angry Birds 2 is out, it's exciting, and it's relevant. Don't know. But we want to get it out to our environment. Right now, we have to go out and provide everybody with a store account and the credit card and so on. But with Windows 10, the Windows Store for Business, I can turn around as the administrator against our volume license agreement, purchase 100 copies. Then look at deploying that application out to my environment and managing it via updates, via Config Manager, via Intune. And suddenly I've got control over the store and how my users get applications from those stores. I don't have to be saying, I don't have to block them or say you have to put an expense form in. I manage it. I bought that license as an enterprise. So when my users leave the organization, they take my application with them because they have it against their Windows Store. But under the Windows Store for Business, I own the application as the administrator. You leave, I take the application off you, I redistribute it to you. I own that license, I acquire the license, and I can move that license around. That manageability is now there, and we've actually got the control now. So there is one of the key things for administrators to think about back-end infrastructure changes. One of the key things we're going to focus on today is also some other Azure-based changes that have been enabled in Windows 10. So Azure Active Directory Join being one example. Being able to think of your domain on-premise, actually in the cloud. The tools and services you do, the way you join and manage a device into your environment, into your enterprise, but via the cloud. And Windows 10 enables that for us.
So a lot of our focus so far has been on just talking through some of the reasons why we've done a lot of this stuff. But it's actually a very important thing around, we didn't do this to make your life easier. Well, we kind of did, actually. But we really did it to make users' lives easier. We've done it so that actually signing into your PC is going to be easy and safe. We've done it to make it that you can, when you lose your laptop, go down to an electronic shop and actually buy a new one and get up and running quickly. We've made it so that it's going to be easier, faster, and cheaper to do things like those kind of rollouts. It's going to give you a better user experience, but you probably don't really worry about that too much because we're IT folks and, you know, we kind of like to make users suffer every so often.
We like help desk calls, don't we?
So, as we start to move forward, we were going to show you configuring Azure Active Directory Connect. But we are going to have to do this with mine because we have no internet right now. So we're going to explain to you a little bit around the way that we do this without being able to show you what's actually happening, or rather I am. So when you configure Azure Active Directory Connect, who's deployed something like DirSync for Office 365? Okay. You should go and install Azure AD Connect right now and replace DirSync. That's our advice. Because it's going to give you A, more capabilities, but B, it's more reliable. And it actually will tell us and you the health of your directory sync environment from Azure AD now as well. Come to that in a second. The actual connection here is pretty simple. What you're doing is you're taking an on-premises server and you're installing the connection software, which will take objects from your on-premises Active Directory and then synchronize them with the cloud, i.e. it's going to recreate them over inside of your Azure AD tenant. As it's doing that, you have total control over what's happening with Azure AD Connect. So you may, for example, decide that you don't want to synchronize every single attribute from your on-premises Active Directory. You might decide that you want to do the minimum possible. And the minimum possible is 4, if you want anything to work. You can actually set to have only one attribute synchronized, which would be the username. Nothing will work.
Is anybody from government here?
No. Yeah.
So in particular, a lot of government agencies are quite concerned around how their attributes are heading into the cloud. What are they sending up to the cloud? What is the information that I'm providing that Microsoft to store for me? So I'm not sure if you have seen it, but the GCIO, for example, has released their document on some recommendations around it. That's great. It's a good reference point. I think it's quite important that even corporate and enterprise refers to that document. It's a good guidelines document. But when it comes to having to reference, send attributes into the cloud, it's important to understand what you are sending. And the latest version of Azure AD Connect will allow you to be quite granular on what it is. So if you pick SharePoint Online, for example, out of the tick menu, it will populate the screen and show you all the attributes that are going up. You can then make the conscious decision whether those attributes are what you want to send up. Be aware, there are elements of SharePoint that would actually not work properly if you did to untick those attributes. But if you were actually using Office 365 in the cloud, for example, for on-prem licensing offsets, do you want to send all your user attributes to the cloud for that, when you can actually just send what you need for Office 365 licensing? So you can tick that box and it sends, I think it's 5 attributes or 6 attributes to the cloud to cover those off. Important things to be aware of, especially in New Zealand where we get a little bit itchy around what's going on in the cloud with our data, with our information.
We can also do a lot of other things with Active Directory Connect as well. We can, I'm not talking to this slide at the moment, just so you know. What we can actually do is we can say we don't want the whole of our directory to go up to the cloud. Maybe you've got one particular group of users that you want to send up to the cloud. Maybe you've got an OU that you want to synchronize. Maybe you've got one forest in your Active Directory that you want to send up there. Maybe you have a really complicated situation in place where you maybe have 3 different Active Directories that may or may not be federated together. We can deal with that. We can actually centralize them all inside of Azure Active Directory. Say you've got even some very, very odd situations, like you have resource forests out there. That's something you might do if, for example, you have a couple of Exchange servers inside of different AD forests, and you might need to replicate all of your users inside of another forest so that they're inside of the global address list. You might end up in a situation where you have a resource forest. We can cope with it, and we can merge all of that information back into Azure Active Directory. We can even expose the metaverse to you, which you can then use in order to be able to say, okay, I want to take these attributes over here, but those attributes inside of my on-premises directory really mean this inside of Azure Active Directory. What does that mean? Well, you might have UPN configured on-premises, but you want to actually convert UPN to be SMTP address inside of Azure Active Directory. You can do that. That's all built in to the Connect tool. Cool. It will also tell you if your infrastructure is up and running from within the Azure console. So if, for example, your DirSync server gets turned off by somebody for some reason, happens, you'll get notified about it. There is one other thing that we can do, and it's really powerful. It's the idea of being able to do password synchronization. Password synchronization is super useful, because what it will do is it will take your on-premises password, hash it, and then synchronize the hash up to Azure Active Directory, and only the hash. So it never knows what the actual password is. Then, whenever a user wants access to a file, they just have to present the same hash. That's just the way that password hashing works. You can do that. You might also decide that you don't want to do that, because you're a little bit too worried even about password hashing. And if that's the case, you can implement Active Directory Federation services in order to offload all of the authentication traffic to on-prem. So then you'll have to have ADFS servers that can touch the internet, but the authentication happens in your own premises if that's a problem for you. What we're actually seeing is more and more customers are just moving over to password sync, because the more that they've done the investigation into what the reason was that their CSO decided that they shouldn't do password sync in the first place, the more that they've actually realized that it was probably not the problem that they thought it was, i.e. that someone's going to steal the passwords, and it was more just down to blunt fear of the fact that the CSO no longer actually has access to the Active Directory quite so much as he used to. So those, we're seeing a lot of folks moving in that direction. It's not actually the only aspect of our solution, though, thinking about the Active Directory. We do a lot of other stuff.
So leveraging enterprise mobility, you start to look at how we manage our devices, our users, from a cloud perspective, but also from an on-premises perspective. So does anybody know of Microsoft's Enterprise Mobility Suite? Has anybody seen, heard, had Microsoft call them to discuss it? Okay, a couple. All right. So the past Microsoft, the Microsoft we knew of the old, used to give us a bunch of products that worked individually. So we had a product here and a product there, and it was the same version, same, came out of the same branch of Microsoft, but it was never really called, it never really integrated well together. So over time, Microsoft looked at that and went, you know what, our products and services need to complement each other. So they started creating suites. And you'll see that with Config Manager and the System Center suite in 2012, how they brought that together and it started working, you know, integrating with each other quite well. But they did the same with their cloud products. Microsoft Intune, Azure Active Directory, Office 365 with rights management. You know, they were working disparately, remote desktop services. They were all products that related to either identity, management, remote access, mobility again, you know, the application management, deployment. And it was about how do we bring those all together? So Microsoft spent quite a bit of time and investment on the Enterprise Mobility Suite and took those individual products and merged them all together. And what that gives us now is the end-to-end story around managing devices, whether it be iOS, Android, whether it be Windows Client, Windows Phone, and the ability to manage them whether on-prem or off-prem. How many people here are used to using ZenApp or Zen Mobile or any of those types of management products that you see out there today? Anybody using RDS as a basic product for remote desktop applications and services? Cool, there's a few. So when you think about those, normally we treat them as a separate application, a separate service. We go, oh yeah, I've got remote desktop services and then I've got my device management. Well, what if all of those together under one single identity were presented to my user? I was able to then control applications and data, whether it be from the enterprise data protection or some applications in like SharePoint, Outlook. I need to be able to make that seamless and interact nicely for my users. And Azure underpins a lot of that information for us and the ability for it. The user's identity, once we've got it from on-premise into the cloud, being able to then have that single identity that identifies our users across on-premise and the cloud. There's nothing worse than our users having to remember a 5-digit username, an email address over here, another email address over there, or an ID over here. If we can unify that identity, and this is the plumbing of anything to do with cloud, being able to take it all, present it to our users, and use simple management tools and processes to enable them to be productive and mobile. We're cutting close on time, so I'm not going to talk too much to the top part of the section because, you know, we could do it word for word if you really want. But think about the Enterprise Mobility Suite as a wide range of products and services. It covers threat management. It covers mobile device management, application management, the ability to restrict who can copy and paste data out of applications, whether it's sensitive from a corporate application to a private application. But building on that, Windows 10 slots in quite nicely. By being able to join Windows 10 to Azure Active Directory, have it automatically enroll in Windows Intune, apply the policies we need, that single identity across all our applications in the cloud, it makes it quite a seamless experience for our users. Then being able to put rights management on the applications. The user goes to Office 365 and is able to quickly just sign in. There's nothing worse than being prompted all the time for your username and password. Skipping through that one. All right, so what we're going to do is, due to the internet connectivity issues we're having with intermittent, we're going to quickly just jump into show configuring Azure Active Directory. What I want to do is, we're going to primarily focus on a few... A couple of the quick elements around it. So, as Simon was saying, we take our user accounts in our groups and we replicate them to the cloud. With that, what do we do with them from there? What does Azure Active Directory give us beyond just a bunch of user IDs and passwords in the cloud and groups? The ability to have a portal or branding is quite important for some customers when we try to authenticate to services in the cloud. So if I look at configuring Azure Active Directory, there's a number of features that I can look at configuring. I could configure self-service for password reset for my users, multi-factor authentication. But we're going to focus a little bit more on the Windows 10 device join point of view. We want to actually use Azure Active Directory as a point to join the machine to the domain. but I'm not joining my local domain, I'm joining Azure Active Directory. So now we start having domain controllers on-premise that we can log into. We've now got cloud domain services that we can log into. I can actually attach my machines to it. So with the, if I scrub through, here we go. Okay. So with that, what we have to do is, by default, a lot of these features are being enabled. Microsoft's taking the approach of give the users what they need and what they want. But as administrators, we're going, hey, I need a little bit of control around this. I want to be able to know what I'm doing, know who's doing what. I want to be able to restrict things like how many users I actually join, how many devices is a user allowed to join to my environment. I'd be interested to see someone trying to join 100 devices to AD, but you never know. So traditionally, an administrator is required to go away and grab a device, join it to the domain, move it to the correct OU, make sure the policies are applying, make sure the user's in the right OU. What if we can actually just have that seamless to the user? The user powers on their Windows 10 machine, whether it be their home PC, whether it be a corporate-issued machine, whether it be the one on the desk, and it's just a blank out of the box from Dick Smith. The user types in their user ID and password, as we saw yesterday in the keynote, and joins a working environment. They select work, or education, I think it is. Mm-hmm. They select enter in their credentials. They get prompted for multi-factor authentication if we've forced them to do that. We may want to validate who's got the user ID and password and who's entering it into AD. But that machine then joins its Active Directory in Azure. We then have it automatically enrolling through to Windows Intune. Or Microsoft Intune, sorry, the old name. Intune applies policies. And it might be simple corporate policies, like I don't want the camera to be used. I want Bluetooth turned off. I want the user to make sure the driver's encrypted. So with being able to do that, we suddenly have control over the device again. But we're only impacting the user in the user's work context. So if it was their private device, their MSA account they've signed into as the other profile is not affected by a lot of the policies we apply. So if you think about all these users being able to join machines to our environment, we probably want to be a little bit more restrictive. So a number of cases, we may just come in and join quickly a couple of users, a user group, and say, these are the users who are allowed to join machines to our environment. These users may be administrators, they may be trusted users, site administrators if you've got them, or they might just be a bunch of users who have justified the need to be able to join their home PCs to your corporate network. What happens when that machine joins the domain? Who are the administrators on that box? We may want to assign an administrator from our corporate environment to that PC. So Simon, in this case, if I join my machine to the environment, will have administrative privileges on my device. He can come in and sign on and have the administrative access that he requires should I need him to do any administration on my device. It's not to say that he can remotely connect to my PC over the internet or whatever and start taking control. It's if he's physically there with me or I hand him my device. I'll quickly save that. But on top of that, I've joined the domain. So what does that give me? I've joined the domain. I've signed in. I'm now on the Contoso network. The next part of the whole Azure AD puzzle is to provide users access to applications and services. How many people here use Office 365 or Salesforce or SpendVision or any other online services? Or you have to hand out a user ID and password to all your users who might use it. If it's Office 365, of course, it should be integrated. But if it's a cloud service that may be outside of what you would consider Microsoft's realm, a learning management system somewhere, you actually probably hand out your user ID and password. How many people's marketing teams or accounting teams have Twitter, LinkedIn, or the recruitment teams, and they have these Facebook accounts that they run on behalf of your organization? I know mine does. There's 13 people that know the user ID and password. What about being able to take those applications and grab control of them again? How many people actually think they know all the cloud services their organization is running? Cool. I'd love to know how you're doing it.
This is actually a really interesting thing. We have a really neat tool as part of this. It's called the Cloud App Discovery Tool, and you run it on your network, and it will tell you what applications people are using. Anyone want to guess what the average number of applications is that it finds? Average, this is. Yes, 300. 300 on average, whenever anybody runs that. That's the average across the telemetry that we're getting back from everybody that's running the tool. You probably have more rogue cloud use inside of your organization than you think you do. And it's one of the tools that's completely free that helps you uncover it. It does something slightly more than that, though, because as soon as we uncover one of those tools for you, we just pop open a screen that will allow you to instantly integrate with this. So from that tool having found somebody using the application, within three clicks, you can have started to move it into being a managed application.
So you see here, I've got a list of different applications. There's 2,500 applications available that Microsoft has integrated with through Azure Active Directory. So these applications are apps that I can take as control of as an administrator, hide the user ID and password, or federate with them, or create a one-time password that does a role every 30 days or 60 days to maintain control of those accounts. Which means if somebody from my marketing team gets disgruntled and ups and leaves, they don't leave with the user ID and password for my Facebook account or my corporate or Twitter account. We've heard some pretty bad stories in the past where disgruntled employees have had a big rant because they had the user ID and password. So with this, we start to be able to take those SaaS applications and maintain control of them as an administrator, but also get them out there and presented to our users, starting to make it easier for our users to operate. So when the user has joined their machine to Azure Active Directory, suddenly, the token they've got from that join and signing into the device has actually allowed them to start breaching across multiple applications and services, not just Microsoft services. If we've integrated with the Air New Zealand application, they go to the website, we'll sign them in. Twitter will sign them in automatically. They don't get prompted for user IDs and passwords. So that starts to then enable further the experience that our users are seeing in Azure. For the sake of time, because we're going to get kicked out soon, what we'll quickly do is cover off from there. Where are we? So as part of Azure Active Directory Premium, there are three flavors of Azure AD. Most of you, if you've got an Office 365 subscription, you'll have Office, you'll have an Azure AD already for in your environment. But there's, you know, as per always, you pay a little bit more, you get more features. With Azure Active Directory Premium, for example, we can start to do things like auto-enrollment. What have we actually got here as well is actually the Microsoft Intune client. What that is it views it as an application. But what happens is when I join my machine to Azure Active Directory, the Intune agent kicks in, the application kicks in, and takes it across and enrolls it for me. At the same time, what we'll do is, I'll configure quickly. You'll see I've got a bit more control. I can say, you know what, for some users, I'll let them enroll. Other users, I won't enroll them. Maybe the CEO has, you know, because they're always the ones who don't like being managed. We might want to exclude him from being managed as part of the Intune process. So we might add him to a group that doesn't contain him in the Intune group. So suddenly we've actually been able to do a bit of granular control over who can join, what applications can they see, what management tools can we provide, what management ability can we provide for them. And the nature is skipping. Okay, that isn't loaded properly, which is awesome. So as I was saying before around control and manageability, as we're seeing with Microsoft at the moment, they're releasing quite often updates in the background. So we're seeing those service releases and cumulative updates coming out. In the background, some of those updates will enable features for us and services for us. Depending on which ring you're part of, whether you're part of the business ring, the fast ring, the slow ring for updates, there'll be more and more functionality being enabled. Although the MDM tools may not support it and may not show it in the console, we can use things like service provider configuration items to actually go away and configure elements of the operating system. What we do have here is there's normally meant to be four or five in here. I'll quickly refresh it. But what we do is we're actually applying configuration to the device and saying, you know what? When you join Azure Active Directory and you come through to Intune, I'm going to upgrade you if you're Pro Edition. I'm going to apply an enterprise license to your machine, and it's going to upgrade that machine from Pro to Enterprise. Or, there we go, yeah. I'm going to enable enterprise data protection. I'm going to take you from the update cycle and put you into the business update cycle. I don't want you getting all the latest updates, but I want to manage it as your IT admin, and I'll move you out of those rings to the one that we actually want you to be as part of long services. And also the update behavior that could happen. If I show you quickly what it looks like, that is what it actually looks like when it comes down to a configuration item. Almost looks like a registry key hierarchy to some of us who are used to writing ADM files in the past for Active Directory. So being able to apply that type of configuration to those devices means we can actually control the behavior of the device as well, the way we want it to be for our enterprise.
And it is, by the way, basically the same thing to do that for an iPad or an Android device. It's basically the same configuration. Obviously, the actual settings are going to be slightly different because an Android device isn't going to accept a Windows license key in order to move up to Windows Enterprise. It's just not going to work. But the same kind of approach is used to manage iOS and Android devices. So once you've gone through that process and you've done the complete enrollment, what does it look like? Well, you end up with a machine that looks something like this. Now, normally wouldn't do this, but have it as a backup video because I want to show you what the process is and what happens at the end here. So I'll hit play. So in this case, Laurie, who's logging into our Azure Active Directory, she's going to sign in with a gesture to get into her PC. So she's going to sign in with a password in this case. And we've already done the enrollment here. We've already done the Azure Active Directory join. So she's been through the out-of-box process. She's now signed in. And we have actually added this machine to our Azure Active Directory and made it MDM managed. So if we go and have a look in the about details here, we're going to see that the PC has been added to the Contoso fake URL organization. We can always disconnect that. You know what? You can turn off that button as well. You can stop people from being able to unenroll their machine if you want to. It's configurable through MDM policy. There it is. Drawing a circle around it. There we go. I might speed this up a bit because I think I paused for quite a while there. Just scrub forward. There we go. Okay. So now I'm going into the internet. I'm just going to Office 365. No sign-on screens at all. Complete single sign-on to everything that was attached to Azure Active Directory. So from here, I'll be able to go and have a look at my identity, prove that I'm still logged on as Laurie. Then I'm going to go across to the Office waffle on the left-hand side of the screen. Whoops, there we go. And from there, I'm going to go over to my OneDrive. Now, I got a bump, but let's just watch exactly what happens here when I go to click on my identity. Oh, straight through. Why did I get that bump? Well, I might have actually logged on with another account at some point, and it got a little bit confused for that particular site. It wanted to just confirm. So it's going to keep going. We're going to go back, have a look at what else we can go into. I think I waited a while here as well. Go to the My Apps section at the bottom, and now you can see that we have Internet and Twitter. These are interesting. Intranet is something we haven't quite talked about. It's something called Azure Active Directory App Proxy, which is a reverse proxy, which is completely part of the product. You install it into a server on-prem, and then you can publish on-prem services through Azure to your users with single sign-on. And it's pre-authenticated with Azure AD before they even touch any of your network. So you can take your on-prem intranet, which might be running on, say, SharePoint. You pop Azure AD App Proxy in front of it. Azure AD App Proxy is going to handle Kerberos constrained delegation to give you access to anything on-prem that it might need to. And it's going to handle point of presence being inside of Azure, which means that it's completely globally available at any time. And then you're thinking to yourself, what about scale with that? Well, you just deploy more app proxies, and we just manage load balancing for you. Cool. That's probably the easiest, simplest way of accessing anything on-prem that anybody's ever developed. Twitter is configured as a single sign-on application, as Carl showed us a couple of seconds ago. So in this case, when we go and attempt to open Twitter in a second, just in a second or two, there we go. Right, this is going to go and click on Twitter. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to take me to Twitter. Ah, except in this case, we actually, in order to access our Twitter account, we need a multi-factor authentication to occur. So this called my phone. It wanted to make sure I was who I said I was, that nobody was trying to break into my account. made me enter my PIN number.
Laurie could be working from home, and we could have a policy that says conditional access or authentication to this application only happens from our work office. But if you're outside of our office, so our corporate environment, use multi-factor authentication. Another way of validating the user without the need of any VPNs.
And that's it. It went straight through. It's loaded up Twitter. Now, you saw a screen there where it actually had a Twitter username and password thing. Because what was happening there was we're using a password vaulting capability in order to access Twitter. Twitter doesn't actually use something called SAML, which is the ability to federate with another organization. So we use password vaulting, meaning that we can take a password and put it into any kind of web form. But we can do something else. We can change the password regularly. We can configure something called password rollover, so that we will, once you've entered that first password, change it. And then we'll continue to change it. We could, in fact, change it every single day to a random set of characters that nobody ever knows apart from Azure. The only way to get to those characters is to be able to log in with an account that you've given access to that application. So that's going to completely be able to eradicate situations like Cos mentioned earlier, where you might end up with a disgruntled employee leaving and accidentally on purpose maybe using the Twitter account. They won't be able to. They won't know the username and password anymore. So it moves into a very, very secure option.
Another thing to consider is the ability to deep provision your user accounts into applications. So we saw this Twitter example there where it says, you know, I'm going to pass through the characters and the user ID and password. But what about if I actually want to have complete single sign-on and federation? There are also applications that will allow me to create a user on-prem. It synchronizes that via Connect to Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory picks up the user as a member of a group, then goes, oh, okay, this user now has Salesforce, goes away and deep provisions that user in the Salesforce system, ready for the user to sign in. So as an administrator, I don't then have to go off and request that Salesforce creates another user account. Here's the user ID. Give me a password. Thank you very much. I'll manage it that way. So we're seeing more and more applications providing deep federation through. One thing we didn't touch on is also the ability to actually just integrate with any other third-party online systems that you may be using that aren't in the catalog. Being able to create attribute maps and so on around those to be able to allow you to then go, well, actually, I use a third-party learning management system that Microsoft doesn't know about, but I want to pass it the user's user ID and password rather than creating a relay through my federation services through to the service. I'll use Azure Active Directory to provide that proxy for me, but also then I can wrap control and identity around it.
Okay, so you might be sat there at the moment just thinking, how do I get hold of this? Because this looks kind of interesting. For a start, you can do Azure Active Directory join without buying anything. Azure Active Directory Basic allows you to do that. But this is now a nice conversation to have because for once, Microsoft is really simple for licensing, kind of. Bear with me. So we're simple, but we're very flexible. So that means that you can buy everything individually. Literally, you can go and buy every single component. You could buy Office 365. You could buy Windows, you could buy EMS, you could buy each individual component of EMS, which is the Enterprise Mobility Suite. Or you can buy the whole thing as something called Enterprise Cloud Suite. And that means you get 5 user cows for Windows. So that means that you can use those users to their Enterprise cows. You could have one user upgrade 5 machines to Windows 10 Enterprise. You could also allow them to log into remote desktop instances, all that kind of stuff, and it works with VDA licensing, which has always been a pain. You also get EMS, so the user can use as many devices as they want to, and they get the ability to use, that includes iOS and Android devices, all attached to the same identity, all of that stuff, and they get an Office 365 E3 SKU. The cost works out to be slightly more than Office 365 E3, but nowhere near the cost of buying all three together. And by slightly more, it's literally a couple of US dollars more. So kind of interesting that we've managed to simplify that level of licensing. But you can go and buy the bits that you need. So if you've decided that you actually have your own on-premises MDM already and you want to continue using that, then you can still just go and buy Azure Active Directory Premium in order to be able to do the automatic population of the MDM details and all the other stuff. You get the opportunity to do it however you want to. We've got a load of resources as well. And related links that might be useful for you. Because quite a bit of stuff didn't work, and I'm very, very sorry about that. There's obviously some kind of strange internet issue going on in this room.
I bet you'll work when we go next door.
Of course it will. Yeah, it's bound to. So, a few things that we've actually put up there. What's in each edition of Azure Active Directory? Pretty important stuff to get hold of. Windows 10, understanding what's in there, excellent. The secret source link is the Windows 10 configuration service provider reference. We all need to get used to looking at CSP references going forward. It's kind of like looking at that that Excel file that's attached on the Microsoft download site that lists every single group policy setting. The CSP references tell us what the device manufacturers have put into their MDM protocols. So they're very useful places to go and find information.
Start using that as an ability for you to also think about your domain services in the cloud. Your machines are in the cloud. Your management is in the cloud. Your policies are in the cloud, and your identity is in the cloud. It's quite a bit of a mind shift.
And that's kind of it. We've got a few seconds left for questions.
We'll stand outside, I guess.
Yeah, and we'll probably stand outside to do that. We're also around at the Hub Happy Hour thing, which was referred to as we're in the pub a little bit later on, if anybody has a need to ask any questions. But if you are in need of asking us questions and you're not going to be around for that kind of thing, you can reach us both on Twitter and all that kind of stuff as well.
Okay. Thank you.